Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this last day of January. You may have seen the series in the New York Times written by Anthony Tomasini, and it concerns ranking classical music. He said in a column in January that film institutes periodically issue lists of the greatest films of all times. Rock magazines routinely tally the greatest albums ever, and think of professional tennis with its system of rankings, telling you exactly which player is number one in the world, or three, or 59. Imagine if we were to do the same in classical music, if there were ways to rank pianists, sopranos, and especially composers, the top 10 composers of all time. Now, that's the list I've secretly wanted to compile. It would be absurd, of course, but fascinating. And so he did. And so we will this hour of our program. We're just delighted to have Lori Skelton with us. Lori really knows her classical music. She hosts on our classical music and news network, our other network, 1 to 3 weekdays. She also does Sunday afternoon live at the Chazen from September until mid-May. That's at 12:30. And she can also be found singing in the Milwaukee Symphony Chorus. She's interested in prairie restoration, riding her bicycle, tending her garden, and extolling the virtues of wine and probably listening to fine classical music while she's doing all of those things. She has also compiled a list of some of the people who were listed in Anthony's The 10 Greatest Classical Composers. We'll ask you this question as well, who you would put on the top 10. I know it's an unbelievable thing to do, but it's actually kind of fun. Everybody else does it. Why not classical music? And we'll be welcoming your phone calls. And here is how you reach us, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. Hi, Lori. Thank you so much for being with us.
Good morning, Kathleen. It's a pleasure to be here.
And great that you put all this music together for us as well. Do you think in these terms, have you thought in these terms, my favorite 10 classical composers?
Well, there's a difference between favorite and great.
Oh.
And I think that's one of the interesting things about what Tomasini did. I will confess that when I first saw the article in the early part of January, I wrote it off. I thought, oh, yeah, here we go, another list. But as I read the article, I was very intrigued to note that what sparked this off in Tomasini's mind was a question from a high school freshman who was writing a paper on how people's taste developed. Mm-hmm. And he sent Tomasini some really wonderful questions, so much so that Tomasini couldn't just email him back. He had to meet the kid in person. And they got to talking about, you know, how did your taste in classical music develop? What did you listen to? What did people tell you to listen to? What did you discover on your own? And it was from that that Tomasini got to think about standards. And this is where the idea of this 10 greatest composers of all time came from. So I do have to start off by saying greatest versus favorite. I think this may be where they got all the response that they did. Tomasini had a series of blog posts. He had a series of videos online. And yes, he got people thinking about what makes a composer beyond good. What makes a composer at the top of the list? And yet people couldn't help but respond with, oh, but I love the music of Chopin. Why wasn't Chopin on the list?
Right.
Or I grew up listening to Tchaikovsky ballets. Why isn't Tchaikovsky on the list? So I think we're gonna have an interesting hour as we try to debate what makes great versus, oh, but my favorite. Is he or isn't he in there?
Exactly. Let me ask you the question that student asked Tomasini, one of the questions, and that is, what do you look for, Lori, in good music?
Well, for me, starting about when I was 16 years old, it suddenly became a matter of, what more can I hear? I'm one of those kids that started off loving late romantic music because I got started with ballet.
Oh.
And for a long time, if it wasn't Tchaikovsky, I didn't care about it. When I was 15 years old, I thought Mozart was boring, and I thought anything written after 1920 was noisy. But when I was 16, I got into a music class that I hadn't anticipated being a part of. And this was a class that got you listening to different things. And there was 1 2-week period where we were taking apart, note by note, a Mozart symphony, and we were also taking apart, note by note, a piece that was written in the 20th century, Penderecki's Threnody for the Victims of Hiroshima. And those were two such different things. It suddenly, the light went on for me that classical music has so many things to listen to. And so for me, what do I look for? Yes, the list of the greatest. That's certainly what I come back to time and time again. But for me, that's a starting point, and I want to see just how far I can go with listening. If there is such a thing as heaven, I always say, heaven is where I will be able to finally hear everything, because life just isn't long enough.
I hope you have a chance. I hope there is, and I hope you have a chance to hear all that you want to hear.
The thing is, for me, it's not just about classical music. I mean, I grew up in a family that was devoted to rock and bluegrass, and I still love listening to that as well. But there is always more and more and more to hear. And having this list, I want it to be a place where people can start from if necessary, go back to if necessary, but see where else it takes you.
There was a great deal of consternation on Anthony's part as to who is going to be number two and who is going to be number three. So let's listen to a little bit of Beethoven, a little bit of Mozart, whoever you would like to have first, and tell us what we're going to hear.
Well, let's start with a Beethoven.
Okay.
Now, everybody knows, da-da-da-da, the
right.
opening of the Fifth Symphony. But what Beethoven did through that entire symphony is he took that four-note motive and the rhythm that we associate with it, and he built it up and changed it and made it grow through the entire symphony. So what you're going to hear right now is an excerpt from the last movement. So that original fate knocking on the door, by now it's become this triumphant statement of just how great the individual spirit can be in the face of fate.
And now, Mozart.
A little bit of Mozart. This comes from the part of The Marriage of Figaro from the opera. Do you remember in Amadeus when Mozart is talking to the emperor about you can start with a duet, and in opera you can grow it to 5 and 6 and 7 voices? They're all talking at once, and it still makes sense?
Hmm.
Well, this is a perfect example of just how many voices you can get on stage and have it sound glorious.
Now, Mozart had a career as an opera composer, right, Lori? But Beethoven did not. Tomasini gives, however, Beethoven the number two slot and Mozart the number three slot. Do you agree with that?
Yes, because I agree with Tomasini's point. Beethoven's music is, it can survive a poor performance.
Mm.
Whereas with Mozart, especially with what we just heard, Mozart is so transparent in what he has put on the page and what he has created. If you're not performing it well, it really suffers. The music really, really doesn't translate well. Whereas Beethoven, who worked a lot harder than Mozart, his sketchbooks are full of things that he crossed out and rewrote and rewrote and rewrote. All of that work makes for music that can stand up to any number of interpretations. Beethoven did write one opera. It happens to be my favorite opera.
Really?
But is it a great opera? No, Fidelio is not a great opera. It's a good opera. And Beethoven took what was a kind of a, I guess you could almost call it tabloid theater, you know, something that anybody could just toss off, and he didn't toss it off. His Fidelio took time and effort, and he put a great deal of heart into it. I love the opera, but can it stand up to anything that Mozart wrote? I would have to say no, it doesn't.
Give me a sense, Lori, of how many of these people were alive at the same time and how they may have influenced each other.
Well, one of the things that Tomasini was careful to point out, certainly one of the great composers is Haydn. And I guess for most days, if I'm sitting down to listen to a symphony or a string quartet, I'll go with Haydn over Mozart. But Haydn was Mozart and Beethoven and Schubert's teacher. So Haydn doesn't make the Tomasini list simply because, as amazing and wonderful and as creative as Haydn was, it was Beethoven and Mozart and Schubert who took Haydn's ideas and moved them forward. And that's certainly something that Tomasini, as you say, struggled with in putting together this list. Do you go for someone who was the pinnacle of his time? Or do you go for someone who was innovative in his time? Do you go for someone who was the teacher of the next several generations? So there's that to consider as well. So for the Tomasini list, Haydn is not on there. His three pupils were.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Schubert for a while. I didn't know very much about, and I still don't know much about his past, but the article made me want to learn more about him, because he does write that he was, he says you got to love the guy. He died at 31, ill, yep, impoverished, and neglected, except by a circle of friends who thought that he was a genius.
And one of the ways that Schubert brought his music to the circle of friends, not in concert halls like we would go today, there were a whole bunch of evenings that were just devoted to, let's get together, maybe 10, 20 of us, maybe in somebody's home, maybe in a pub. Yes, there will be plenty of liquid refreshment, but there will also be plenty of music. And Schubert could just sit down at the piano and just start improvising things that were so delightful. The reason he could do that was Schubert grew up in a house where all the kids were encouraged to play music. Yes, Schubert was a little more talented than his siblings, but he had this wonderful grounding of the basics, and he certainly had Haydn and Mozart in his ears as he was playing music at home. He was composing before he was 15 years old, and by the time he was meeting friends and meeting other musicians, he would have at his disposal a keyboard and great people to talk about music with. He could just sit down and improvise and then go home, of course, and write. For anyone who is a singer, you have to pay attention to Schubert. There are over 600 songs alone Schubert. Amazing melodist. And he was one of the first song composers to really focus on making the piano accompaniment paint a picture, which is something that we don't think of as really being part of classical music until well into the Romantic era, that music could have extra musical levels to think about. Tone painting, it's a word that we use fairly often now to talk about classical music, but tone painting for Schubert, that would have been something fairly radical in his day. And so what he was doing with his songs was creating these miniature pictures that would give you such vivid images in your head. And that's even before we get to the symphonies and his incredible late piano sonatas, so dramatic and so packed with incredible compositional technique.
Do you know why, if he was such a genius and so many were in awe of him, Laurie, that he died impoverished?
Well, that's a long story right there. A combination of, this was in Schubert's day, musicians didn't have quite the commercial hold on their intellectual output that they do today. They don't have agents. They don't have financial advisors watching out for their every move. Schubert was not a businessman and wasn't very financially savvy about handling his own music. Of a lot of what he was writing was just staying set aside. It waited for someone else to discover. Years later, pieces would get published and played, and suddenly people were realizing just how good the guy was. Mm. Oddly enough, Bach had the same problem. A lot of composers after the end of the Baroque era really didn't know just how good Bach was. Certain keyboardists, knowing his keyboard technique, they would practice Bach's music. But it wasn't really until Mendelssohn started bringing out performances of Bach cantatas and then some of the bigger works. So not every composer is known, revered, loved, and financially compensated in his own time. A lot of composers, especially a couple of hundred years ago, had to wait until after they were dead before we really knew just how good they were.
That's too bad. Let's hear a little bit of Schubert before we pause. Tell me what we're going to listen to.
Well, this is a combination of a song and a string quartet. His string quartet number 14 is based on his song, Death and the Maiden, the slow movement. So we've got a simultaneous nod to all those hundreds of songs and the dramatic power that he could bring to so many of his works.
Top 10 composers of all time, classical composers, is what we're talking about this hour of the program. And Laurie Skelton is our guest. She has compiled a list of wonderful music for us to sample this hour. She is the Sunday afternoon Live at the Chazen host on our Classical Music Network from September until mid-May. And she's also 1 to 3, the host on weekdays on that network. We go to phone calls now for Laurie, and let's go to Bill from Sun Prairie first. Hi, Bill.
Hi. This is a wonderful program. I really compliment Wisconsin Public Radio for putting it on. Laurie sounds like my musical soulmate. You know, there's so few people that really understand and appreciate the depths of classical music. I'd just like to offer a few of my favorites. There's, of course, Dvorak's New World Symphony, Erik Satie, the Troy Gymnopédies, Wagner, Foray and the Requiem. But if I had to listen to one composer for the rest of my life, it would probably be Edvard Grieg with Nocturne, Last Spring, Piano Concerto in A Minor, It's a morning mood, of course. That's my list.
Thank you so much for the call. Do you agree with your musical soulmate on that, Lori?
Well, Bill brings up some wonderful composers who didn't make the list. And I noticed that in terms of Tomasini's vote for number 10, Béla Bartók, who was a composer who worked well into the 20th century, not only working on his own music, but he was considered the premier ethnomusicologist. He was going out and getting field recordings of folk music all throughout the Hungarian countryside. And I had a lot of complaints coming from not only the Tomasini list, but from friends of mine, that if you want to talk ethnomusicology, if you want to talk incorporating folk music elements and bringing them into the concert hall, well, why not Dvorak? Why not Tchaikovsky or any one of the Russian nationalists? Why was it Béla Bartók that got the nod and nobody else? All of the composers that Bill mentions, Fauré, Oh Heavens Yes, The Requiem, it's a glorious thing to sing and to listen to. Grieg has wonderful things that evoke his country. But in terms of moving it forward, again, this idea that we're putting on the list of the greats, those who were not just at the pinnacle of what they did, but were offering something to give music a chance to grow. I think Bartók does belong on the list, whereas as much as I love Dvorak, as much as I love Tchaikovsky, maybe not the greatest in terms of, again, the idea that what Dvorak was doing with his Czech suite, his Slovakian melodies, he was basically paying attention to how much money and how much popularity Brahms had incorporating so-called gypsy music into some of his pieces. So there's this, I don't want to call it a pastiche, but it's not quite as, here's a good way to put it. When I listen to Dvorak or Tchaikovsky, I don't have the feeling of digging in the dirt. I don't feel the earth that I do when I hear the music of Bartók. Mm. It really, pardon the pun, gets down to the roots of ethnomusicology, of roots music, if you will. Mm. And so they're glorious composers, but greatest, maybe not in this instance.
All right, well, let's dig in the dirt with Bartók then and set it up for us.
This is the last piece that Bartók wrote. By the time he wrote his concerto for orchestra, he was in exile and very homesick. But he got a commission from the Boston Symphony Orchestra to write a piece for them as a celebration. And what he did was he wrote a piece to make every single part of the orchestra shine like a soloist throughout the piece. He called this final movement a life assertion.
That's a whirlwind, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
I like that.
And from 1943, and again, you've got somebody longing for his homeland, in exile in the United States, and yet he is still able to bring to the forces of a great symphony orchestra something that lets certainly every member of the orchestra feel truly the individual voice in something bigger. And I think the audiences as well respond to that.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Sally, our next caller from Wayland, Minnesota. Hi, Sally.
Hey, you guys. Great show. Thank you very much. I'm not a connoisseur. Someday I will be. And my favorite answers to this is I'll just hit my default button and say whatever I'm listening to now or whatever I listened to last and really gave some thought to it. So I guess for that, the last thing that I really got involved with was Chopin. I liked a lot. But the reason I'm calling, if I have to throw a vote, that's my vote. But the reason I'm calling is I just heard a show very recently on WPR. It was like The Moth or This American Life or something like that. And it was about this guy who's using computers to break down what makes Mozart Mozart. And then he's using computers to make compositions. And I don't have, you know, a really tuned ear, but this stuff was sounding pretty good. So I'm just wondering, we're using computers to be our doctors and computers to be our school teachers, and we're using our computers to be our composers now. You don't have to comment on that whole thing, but just on the composing part. What's your opinion, please?
Frankly, I haven't heard the show you're talking about, although I will head back to my computer as soon as I'm off the air and try to find it. I'm a little skeptical. I think computers are a wonderful tool when you're composing, but I also think that composers, which I think the word comes from componare, you know, to put together, I think there needs to be something of human, there needs to be the human touch, there needs to be the human brain, which oddly enough means there's going to be human frailty, human mistakes. The idea that when you're a composer, when you are an artist of any kind, when you're creating anything, you put yourself out in the line with the possibility that it may not be perfect. And I don't think you can really compose with a formula. I will confess, just hearing you talk about this, I'm a little bit skeptical.
Hmm. Let's talk about Wagner for a moment, who is widely thought to have been terribly anti-Semitic. Anthony writes in one of his pieces that he was an egomaniacal jerk who transcended himself in his art. That always, when somebody can write stuff as lifting and be as important as he is, it always dumbfounds me, Lori, that somebody could be anti-Semitic and a jerk.
You want your composers, you want anyone you look up to who is elevating a part of your life, you want that person to be just as perfect a person
yes.
as he or she can be.
Right.
And, well, that's part of that human thing again. We have our frailties. We have our failings. And, no, Wagner as a person, I don't know how his wife could stand him. I certainly wouldn't want to have been married to the guy. And yet, he did have this uncompromising view about what art should be, what would be needed to create it. Yes, he pushed others sometimes past the point of comfort to realize that vision, but he did have a vision, and it was a very powerful vision for what opera could do. Opera is going to be larger than life to begin with, and he just pushed it that much further. And so it's a case of love the creation, not necessarily the creator in this case.
So should we dump him and play Verdi, or should we play both?
Well, since I could not find the vocal duet for Wagner that Tomasini cited in the article, I've got a piece of Wagner that some people might recognize, the Prelude for Tristan and Isolde, but I'll be honest, in order for that piece to really have an impact, you need about 5 minutes to listen, and we don't have that much time.
Okay.
So let's go to the Verdi.
Okay. And as you remind us, Lori, that is Pavarotti.
Oh, yes. Oh, Pavarotti and Joan Sutherland. And such a lovely duet. The young Alfredo, on meeting Violetta in La Traviata, he is telling her that he saw her one day and he's been in love with her ever since. He says, "This is a love that inspires radiant dreams of life eternal." And how does she answer him? "I can only offer you friendship. Pleasure is all that I ask of life. Freedom and joy forever. Forget me and find another love." And how Verdi manages to get those two opposite sentiments in that one glorious duet. It's just incredible.
Oh.
The one thing, I think the reason Tomasini went and ranked Verdi just a little higher than Wagner, the other thing to think about is who did these composers choose as subjects for their operas. Yeah, Wagner is talking about the gods in Valhalla, and he's talking about Knights of the Holy Grail, whereas Verdi is talking about a courtesan. Verdi is talking about, you know, going out and living a little bit more of a normal life, so that Verdi was able to transcend the heights when he wasn't writing about gods. I think that's what gives Verdi mm-hmm. the advantage.
I love the little statement here about him, that he's the founder of a retirement home for musicians.
Oh, yes.
That's still in operation in Milan.
Yes, although in his day, you know, Verdi was living with a woman out of wedlock.
Uh-oh.
It's not necessarily that Verdi was a perfect saint. But yes, Verdi does have some human qualities that I think more of us are a little more comfortable with.
We're talking with Lori Skelton this hour about the 10 most important, the 10 greatest composers, classical music of all time. It's the task that Anthony Tomasini took on in the New York Times, and we thought that we would ask Lori, who knows her music and is the host on our Classical Music Network and Ideas Network News. She hosts from 1 to 3, and she also does Sundays from – what time are you on Sundays, Lori?
The concert at the Chazen runs from 12:30 until 2 o'clock.
12:30 until 2, right. And so she very kindly put together music for us to listen to and her great thoughts on all of these composers. And we're welcoming your phone calls as well. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And the email address, if you would like to use that, is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Lori Skelton, our guest, and let's go to more phone calls. Bob is next in Eau Claire. Hello, Bob.
Good morning to you both. This has been an interesting hour. I, too, have read that piece. I, quite frankly, when I saw that Bartok was on the thing, and Sibelius was not, I thought, well, gosh, I think Sibelius has done a lot to transcend and be a bridge between all of that sumptuous music of the Romantic era and leading into the neoclassic era, if you will, of the 20th century. Excuse me, but I have another question that Lori, I agree with you about Tchaikovsky. If I had a personal list, Tchaikovsky would be either number one or number two, and Rachmaninoff would also be on the list. And I presume that Tchaikovsky and Rachmaninoff, I think I've read that they were contemporaries for a while. And I've often wondered about a certain thing that the two of them did, and whether or not it was one was imitating the other or whatever. In several of Tchaikovsky's symphonies, and also in both Rachmaninoff symphonies, and in his, in particular, the Second Piano Concerto. They end either the entire piece or a specific movement with four notes, and they're in the same key. It's dum 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 dum, and sometimes they'll do dun dun dun, but it's always with the four notes, and both of them are doing it. And do you have any insight as to what is going on there with the two of them?
As to what they might be sharing in terms of a common musical heritage coming from Russia, no. I think they're tapping into what we hear in Beethoven. I think they're tapping into what is just a powerful rhythmic motif and then using it in a lot of different ways. I can't speak that there wasn't a tie, but it's not a conscious tie that I know of. I think it's da-da-da-dum. That'll hammer home a finale in grand style, no matter who is doing it.
Thanks very much for the call. Let's go next to Jean in Oshkosh. Hi, Jean.
Good morning, Kathleen. Good morning. I feel like that 80-year-old woman you had on your previous program. I'm listening, and I'm seething.
You're seething?
I don't know what you haven't the qualities that make a piece of music great have not been identified. That's one item. For instance, I'd like to throw in some U.S. music, Ode to a Common Man by Aaron Copland, for mm-hmm. instance.
Mm-hmm.
I love public radio and public television, and we support it mightily. But what is ignored on Saturday mornings, and Lori, what's ignored on Sunday afternoons, is the human voice. It to me, it is one of the most, and you're in a choir, and I was in a choir in Milwaukee many, many, many years ago. It's the human voice, which is a brilliant instrument. There are many pieces of music that make me cry from joy. It touches my soul. So I'm listening to the two of you talk and the guests, and the callers, and I'm saying, wait a minute, guys, you're narrowing things down and you haven't identified the criteria that allow us to narrow things down. I hate Southern music, but I certainly respect the taste of the millions of people who like that music. Well, if you feel up to it, just some of these identified.
Okay. Okay, thanks, Jean, for the call.
First of all, I'll be honest. If we were going to go into a criteria of what makes a piece of music great, we'd be talking until 6 o'clock tonight, and we would have to open a couple of bottles of wine while we were doing it. Jean, I would encourage you to go to the New York Times online to go through Anthony Tomasini's series of blog posts and the videos, and this is going to take some time. I mean, it took him 2 weeks to compile the list. And my apologies if you think we're slighting the criteria this morning in our eagerness to get to the music. It's a lot to cover. And it's one of those conversations that I don't think ever really ends. The more you listen to, the more you've got to talk about. I will address your missing singing on Wisconsin Public Radio. And unfortunately, you're right, we haven't had a lot of singers at the Chazen this year because one of them got sick last fall. Although, as I understand it, we've got a group coming down from Green Bay in a couple of weeks, and there will be singers on that program. The sad truth is, voices are not as popular on the radio during the day when people are working. We get the occasional complaint, if we do play vocal music, it's in a foreign language, it's a screeching soprano, I don't understand it, I find it an intrusion. As much as I would like to have more vocal music on the radio, I do program it. Sometimes it stays on the list, and sometimes I am asked to remove it. In this case, it's a matter of pick your battles, although I'm kind of surprised to hear you say that you don't hear enough singing on Saturday morning, because I know a lot of people request vocal music for Classics by Request on Saturday mornings, specifically because that's a time when they can say, I really want to hear this. And I know I hear a fair amount on Saturday morning right before we get to the Metropolitan Opera, several hours of singing in the afternoon.
And we do want to let people know that the link for the New York Times criteria and the whole process that was, I mean, it's obviously who this person likes to your personal taste, and everybody has a different list of top 10. We're doing this because it's an interesting thing to do, to come up with the top 10 and why people choose certain composers.
Gene mentioned, where was Aaron Copland's fanfare for The Common Man?
Yes.
Tomasini very consciously stayed away from composers who are either living right now or are only recently deceased, with the idea that you gain a little more perspective when there's a little more time. Here in Madison, one of our music critics, Jacob Stockinger, who has a wonderful daily blog on music called The Well-Tempered Ear. When Tomasini's article came out, Jake did a top 10 of who he considered the greatest composers of all time, no holds barred, and he actually included a living composer in that list. He included John Adams in that list, and I'd have to agree with him. I think John Adams is a stunning composer. Mm. But that was out of Tomasini's line.
As would be somebody like Gershwin, who I'm very fond of.
Wonderful composer. Was he the greatest? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
He was certainly incredibly innovative in combining jazz with classical music.
Mm-hmm.
The greatest? Not sure, but you're certainly right. I love to listen to him.
Yeah. Steve in Milwaukee is our next caller. Hi, Steve.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm going to kind of make this as short as possible. I put Beethoven at the top of my list, both for greatest and my personal favorite. I haven't heard yet Johannes Brahms mentioned. Specifically, his symphonies are very good, but I am just awestruck every time I hear Brahms' Second Piano Concerto, which I think is a colossus in the genre. And I'm wondering whether Brahms got ranked in the top 10 and what the guest believes and thinks about Johannes Brahms, specifically the Second Piano Concerto, and also generally as far as his ranking in the overall scheme of this program.
He makes the list. Lori.
Yeah. Steve, the first time I heard the second movement of the Brahms Second Piano Concerto, where there's that incredible cello solo working with the piano and the orchestra, I was just in tears. And if ever I meet someone who says to me, I've never listened to classical music before in my life, what do I start with? I start them out with Brahms.
Hmm.
Always. Brahms is the gateway drug for me. Brahms, between the symphonies, the concertos, and certainly at the Chazen, I get to hear some amazing performances of Brahms chamber music. I'm going to hear one this coming Sunday with the Lawrence Chamber Players. They're playing my absolute favorite, Brahms Piano Trio. And I think Brahms has a wonderful quality. He was holding on to a lot of the classical structure from Mozart, from Beethoven, but he was giving it the colors, the harmonic richness of the Romantic era. It's a wonderful combination. And yeah, he gets under your skin in a way that few composers do.
And we're going to hear a little Brahms now.
This is the opening of the Piano Quartet No. 1 in G minor. Tomasini referred to Brahms as having thrilling grandeur and strangeness, and I think this is a great example.
Thank you.
We're talking about if you can ask somebody to come up with such a list, and we've decided that you can. The top 10 classical composers of all time. And that was Brahms. We were getting a lot of messages in, too. So let me just tell you, because we're running short on time, and we haven't even heard number one yet, that we'll send these to Lori, and I'm sure she'd be happy to respond to some of your...
Definitely.
Wouldn't you, Lori? I thought you
love
would.
Love to.
Okay.
Love to.
All right, well, let's go to number one. And he says it is da-da-da-da-da, Bach. Would you agree?
Time magazine 10 years ago called Bach the composer of the millennium, and I agree completely.
You do?
I very much so.
Because?
Bach, all right, we're getting back to criteria here.
Right.
Bach had this, where he was in history was at a musical crossroads. He didn't consider himself an innovator, but he was taking music of the Baroque and pushing it farther than anybody had in terms of harmonic daring. There are passages in Bach pieces that are as atonal as something that would come up in the 20th century. The counterpoint, the sheer complexity of the music is mind-boggling. And it happens to come together in some of the most wonderful. There are no superlatives that are enough for Bach, in my opinion, whether it's the solo cello suites, which were my favorite things to have on when I was studying in college. All of the solo cello music has this wonderful forward push that I could still appreciate the music and not yet get so caught up in it that I'd get distracted from my studies. And then you move on into the great works for organ. And then what I have the great pleasure to sing are some of the really big pieces, the Passions, the St. Matthew Passion we've done several times in Milwaukee. The first thing I ever sang in the Milwaukee Symphony Chorus was the Bach B minor Mass in the spring of 1985. And we recently revisited it just a few years ago. And it's an incredible roller coaster.
We're going to play,
it really is.
We're going to play some of that as we leave you. Lori, thank you so much for the hour and for putting all the music together. It was wonderful.
Oh, thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks. Lori Skelton, our guest, and we're going to end on the number one composer, according to Lori and also according to Anthony. And we'll also direct you to our Facebook page with a whole listing of the top 10 classical composers, and we'll be with you again tomorrow for another program. We'll be talking about tomorrow we'll talk about Egypt, the first hour of the program, and we want to thank Lori Skelton very much for putting all the music together, and thank Chrissy Pease and Rhonda Fanning, and we're going to play a little bit of Bach for you right now. Number one on everybody's list, you may have a different list, but on the people we talked to today, the final section of the Gloria in the B minor Mass, an example that Lori writes of how Bach could create tremendous drama through the form of the fugue. The tenors start with a cheery tune in a major key that in less than a minute turns into a complex layering in minor throughout the full chorus and orchestra. Well, that was fun, wasn't it, everybody? We'll have to do the same with other kinds of music down the road. Thanks for listening. Great conversations ahead.